and then realizes what has happened or something, but it doesn't matter because in the end.
Oh, so it's a big mistake?
Right. Something like
That's
that.
That's interesting.
But in the end, the question is, it's outside of his control, right? It had to have happened because it must have happened because he's in this loop. Otherwise, he wouldn't have existed in the first place. So how did that happen the first time? That's the chicken or egg thing. Yeah. And we've just lost every listener. No one is still here. Yeah. All alone. Yeah. I miss you dreadfully.
That's the nervous part for me. Talking about something that I'm going into that I don't think I have very good answers for.
Yeah, here we are. Life, death, sci-fi. Welcome. I should say welcome to a man who would never seduce himself.
Oh, no.
Or would you, is the question.
That's terrible.
Would you? How's that for a weird hook? See, I said I was going to be weird.
Yeah.
We went out looking for a paradoxical short story and found one.
Right here at Life, Death, Sci-Fi, Weird Time Travel. We're talking about All You Zombies by Robert Heinlein. Back in 1958, he wrote this. And in this episode, I'm sure we're going to talk about zombies, time loops, probably paradoxes.
Not the kind of zombies you may be thinking if you haven't read it. Of course, if you haven't read it, there will be spoilers. You might pause this, save it, come back, join us another day. Spoilers.
Tend to come quick
on these recordings, I feel like. Yeah.
That's true. That's a good way to put it. They tend to come quick.
Yeah.
And then you think, did we say that or not? Did we give the spoiler alert or not?
Yeah, we usually do. I'm not sure there's enough of a pause there. I guess we need a special device to go back in time and fix that.
That would be easy. That would make it easy.
We meet our protagonist in a future bar, 2000.
That was sly.
217 in Pop's Place. And we find out this barkeep is a sort of secret agent, a temporal agent, a secret one, a clandestine one, who travels back to fix things from the past. And by fix, we don't really know, but fixes things. And he's there to meet someone who, and here comes the spoilers, we later find out, or should I say it that way? He meets someone and begins to question that person, to softly interrogate, if that's not an oxymoron, to ask some questions, to pull out and reveal a bit of that person's story. They bet a bottle, and the person at the bar begins to reveal their story. Eventually, we find that this person at the bar used to be a woman, was impregnated by a brief lover, had a baby in a hospital. That baby was shortly thereafter stolen. And in the hospital, the doctors tell her that she is intersex. She was born with male and female organs. The doctor says that they had to remove her female organs, and they help her, they force her. This is forced, right? But she ends up transitioning to a male. She's upset and wants to avenge, would love to meet the person who had impregnated her in the past and ghosted her, disappeared. And the barkeep says that he knows this person and he can present him to him at this point, but to Jane, I think is her name. This Jane takes her into this back room and then uses a time machine, kind of surprises Jane with this time machine and brings the both of them to the past. It happens to be to this moment about the time that she's meets his lover and is impregnated, leaves him there, and then goes to, this is why it's all tricky. But I found it a little, I had to slow down when I was.
You did a great job.
Yeah, I had to slow down when I was reading it too. So leaves this Jane there, this now male in 1965 or 70, right around that point. and then goes over to the hospital short time later and takes this baby and then takes the baby back to 1945 and leaves it at an orphanage and then comes back to where he left. Can I say male Jane? It's just tricky to talk about the pronouns and all that stuff. But this temporal agent comes back to where he left the person he was looking for at the bar. And it turns out, and he says, I think you can figure out what's happened here, right? You've fallen for yourself, impregnated yourself, and we realize the baby he took was this baby that he brought back to early on, and that baby becomes him, right? And then as he's starting to say this,
I'm nodding my head.
The song that starts playing at the bar, which I found here, he is, let's hear it. He finds out that he is.
It sounds funny, I know. How are you? Here's what I am on my own. Hello. I'm the Jason. I'm
that old grandpa. He's his own grandpa.
Oh my God.
How about that?
That's for sure.
That's Lonzo and...
Lonzo and Oscar.
I am my own grandpa. I'm my own grandpa.
Yeah. I remember when I first heard that, I just didn't get it. What's the trick? What are you talking about? I guess they're talking about time travel.
Yeah. As a time machine, this is definitely time travel. Taking the grandpa paradox to a very literal level here.
I read somewhere that Heinlein did this all in one day.
Oh, is that right? Wow.
Wrote this story all in one day.
It has that feel to it, right? It's got a
kind
of energy like that. I really like this piece. This makes me want to read more Heinlein. We talked about, I think, was that our first episode or overall? Stranger
episode one, our premiere episode here on Life, Death, Sci-Fi was a Heinlein story. Hmm.
And we struggled with that one. We had real mixed feelings about Heinlein and how that work had aged in terms of its portrayal of gender.
Right.
Yeah. Gender stereotypes.
And this one was spot on for that kind of stuff. I just finished an LGBTQ novel about time travel, and it was in that genre. So it was connected with this one when they're talking about the transgender stuff.
What was it? Do you remember the name of it offhand?
I came thinking.
One Last Stop.
How did you know? Come on.
I just quickly searched online.
Yeah.
That came up. 10 of the best LGBTQ plus books, time travel from proudgeek.co. One Last Stop.
Now,
a funny, now emotional, time sapphic contemporary romance from Casey McQuiston with a bisexual main character, lesbian love interest, and smart magical twist. Nice blurb.
That's right. So I like the explanation of the time travel and what it was doing to the people in the time travel. But I didn't really believe the device for time travel. It's a standard kind of thing.
For you, wait, which are you talking about now? All You Zombies or One Last Stop?
Oh, sorry. One Last Stop.
Oh, okay.
So for my review?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not sure it's going to make Life, Death, Sci-Fi, though. Just have that. We're talking about All You Zombies by Robert Heinlein here, and we really haven't had a good zombie discussion yet.
That's true.
We've read books, whole books about zombies. What was it? Z Nation? World War Zombie.
Yeah. That was a favorite. That's an all-time favorite.
When Robert Heinlein wrote this in 1958, there wasn't that kind of zombie genre around that is how we see zombies right now, didn't connect with this story zombies. And I thought, oh, maybe he just didn't know zombies. Oh no, I was totally wrong on that. The zombie apocalypse movie came out, or at least the first one, back in 1950 something.
Oh, okay.
50.
Zombie apocalypse movie?
Yeah. 58, 59. I was going to pin up the poster for that, 1955, because it's great. It's a cartoon with these guys fighting off zombies in a cafe. Pretty fun.
You're okay. I'll have to check that out.
So zombies. Yeah. I feel that if I was Heinlein's editor, I might say, zombies, what else could you put in there? Because it doesn't really fit. I don't see the zombies in your story. Do you see zombies in this story?
I do, but not the kind that we're talking about here, like World War Z or sounds like that zombie apocalypse. Yeah, it's a very misleading. In the end, it's not. But I guess as a sort of clickbaity title, we're so inundated with zombie TV shows and all that. Although I like
that
like
show that you saw.
Subgenre.
It's the season. You saw whole seasons of these zombie.
Right. Yeah.
The genre.
I loved The Last of Us. It's amazing. I can't remember if do we ever talk about that? Were you watching that?
Of course.
Yeah. I think we talked about it.
We talked about it a little bit. Yeah. And I think it's a more believable zombie story than most of them.
The Last of Us. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
If you believe in zombies at all.
Yeah. Walking Dead. I enjoyed that in the beginning. I didn't really keep watching it, but I could have. It just gets a little redundant, I think, over time, that style. But I think that's a graphic novel originally. I think that's cool.
Yeah. Probably. Yeah. I don't know.
The first one. So this one, you'd think, it sounds based on your research, that there was a film. Look at that title.
Oh, exactly. And back when he wrote this, he knew all about those kind of zombies.
Hmm.
Was he using it as a early form of clickbait?
Yeah, interesting. If you could follow that plot summary, you are amazing.
It was a good plot summary.
Yeah, you are amazing if you could follow that. I'm sorry, I tried. I didn't really get the very ending there. And so I guess we could skip to that after all this has taken place. And what has he really done there? He's insured and he's in this loop. And so we could talk about free will and that kind of thing, right? Because maybe put a pin in that. He's in this sort of loop that he can't escape from because he has to make sure that he himself is born and lives. So he's stuck in that cycle and he's meeting these other versions of himself. So after he's done all this, he goes back to his room. I don't know, I picture this whole thing and I think as I do a lot of stories like this, to me, it's like a Blade Runner kind of scene in my mind, Blade Runner-ish. So he's going back to some tiny little pod, right? That's his home. Maybe the bed slides out from the wall or whatever. He goes back to his room. Yeah, it says like these entry points. I like that style too. He's got these kind of data. It's like this entries journal. And he says it's 2200, 12th of January. He goes back and he says his eyes fell on the bylaws of time over his bed. Man, I think just for fun, maybe I'll read through those. Never do yesterday what should be done tomorrow. If at last you do succeed, never try again. A stitch in time saves 9 billion. A paradox may be paradoctored. It is earlier when you think. Ancestors are just people. Even Jove nods. These are all like, I love this. Heinlein's clearly having fun there. What were those old books where you get all these little maxims and sayings in it?
Oh, yes, I remember those. And now you can get them on YouTube.
Oh, is that right?
Same kind of thing.
But it reads like one
of
those.
And they're mesmerizing.
He says, they didn't inspire me the way that they had when I was a recruit. I left that part out too. After revealing all this to Jane that comes into the bar, he leaves him now, right, in a place to become the recruit, to join this service that he's a part of and become the person he is in later years. So he makes sure all that happens.
You get this father-son vibe out of that place, that dialogue in the story. And
I guess
I have to say it was
hero's journey sense. He's that avuncular, teacher-like figure that introduces him to a new world and briefly, it's a short story, right? But trains him and then, he ends up in a very different place in the end, a different person.
I honestly felt it a little creepy because I could see what was going on and it wasn't a father-son at all. And it was like, oh, you, a little bit you.
Yeah.
Is that what Heinlein does to us?
I think. We'll come back to the loop in a minute here. We didn't just read this part. Yeah, they didn't, these quotes, these maxims, they didn't inspire me the way that they had when I was a recruit. 30 subjective years. There's a lot of little things in the story that are fun, right? Subjective years of time jumping wears you down. I undressed, and when I got down to the hide, I looked at my belly. A cesarean leaves a big scar, but I'm so hairy now that I don't notice it until I look for it, right? This is funny. Then I glanced at the ring on my finger. This is a ring that was mentioned earlier. Although the copy I had, it said it was a worm. And here it says, I don't know what that means, that change earlier in the story, but it says the ring is a snake that eats its own tail forever and ever. Cool symbol. We can come back to that Ouroboros symbol. And I know where I came from, but where did all you zombies come from? And I felt a headache coming on, but a headache powder is one thing I do not take. I did once, and you all went away. So I crawled into bed and whistled out the light. You aren't really there at all. There isn't anybody but me, Jane, here alone in the dark. I miss you dreadfully. Wow. Yeah. I feel like this is a powerful ending. At first, the switch to like second person was so striking, right? We get this in the title. Taking a quote from here, it's got the dashes on each side, clearly indicating it's pulled out. All you zombies. And my initial thought was readers. I thought that all the readers were zombies.
Yeah, that's not nice.
Yeah, it was aggressive, right? But there is something aggressive about this moment. All you zombies, all these people seemingly living their lives unaware of something like this that may be happening around them or perhaps where they came from. And in a sense, I don't think it's the readers. He does view the other iterations and versions of himself as these clueless, almost zombie-like figures that are just marking passages of time so that he himself can be realized in some way. He's the real protagonist. And these other versions of himself are just these empty zombie-like vessels that are a means to a meaningful end, and that's him. And yet, without those things that create his identity, he feels alone and empty. It's creating this headache, but he doesn't want to take anything to cure the headache because it's almost like he'd be destroying parts of himself and he can't live with him and he can't live without him, the feeling he's got.
And at that moment where he was getting the headache, Jane, I was getting a headache too, because I'm thinking about this whole thing. Heinlein does this on purpose, gives us the depth of the Jane character, but not much depth to any of the other characters. So we don't see those as important as the Jane character.
They feel a bit zombie-like. And so even, which is tricky, that's a good point. That's a real success that Heinlein achieves here, because it is earlier Jane telling the story, and yet it's really just filtered through the barkeep, this later Jane. So even though she's telling it, she's not really fleshed out any kind of way that has us feeling like she's anything but a sort of zombie in the end.
Easier to believe that, right?
Yeah. And I like the headache idea too, because you wonder, did he have a headache when he was writing this at the end? Time travel is, it hurts as a reader and a thinker trying to work through these things.
Yeah, like I said at the beginning of the show, it's just when you have these conversations, it's hard because you're not going to come up with an answer that you like all the time, or maybe not an answer at all. So that's a hard conversation to have. You know, you want to have some sense of, I know what's going on.
Right.
But there are times in this story like that.
This one had just enough confusion, ambiguity. I really enjoyed that. I felt like there was a slow reveal here that I really appreciated. There's some moments early on where I meant to list these all out, but I didn't mark them, where at first this barkeep wants this Jane, this earlier version of himself, to reveal some things. And it's almost like he needs certain things to happen. So he's trying to make some connection.
Yeah, that's classic time travel stuff. All of a sudden, you find this diary that's full of these entries and it's about you. And then you realize that it's in your own handwriting and it's 100 years old, something like that kind of device. And the barkeep was that way for this.
Yeah.
The way this was set up is classic short story pacing and design. I appreciated that because we haven't really read too many short stories.
Right.
In Life, Death, Sci-Fi. Some of them have been tomes.
Right. Yeah, this is the opposite of, say, the time shifts. Yeah, the counterweight to that. Yeah, so he says things like, this earlier, Jane says, okay, he began to start with, I'm a bastard. And the barkeep says, no distinction around here. He snapped, my parents weren't married. And the barkeep says, still no distinction. I insisted, neither are mine. So he finds all his way of, we slowly, you're like, okay, so they're both sort of orphans, right? We don't know who their parents are. And there's moments like that that are pretty cool. And we get, yeah, he says this again, I do 100% bastard. In fact, I added, no one in my family ever marries, all bastards. And he says, oh, that. I showed it to him. It looks like a wedding ring. I wear it to keep women off. It's an antique I bought in 1985 from a fellow operative. He had it fetched from a pre-Christian Crete. And he says, the worm, Ouroboros, the world snake that eats its own tail, forever without an end, the symbol of the great paradox. So he's wearing this ring. There's these hints, this foreshadowing.
I totally love those. And you're right. This story has big parts that are so cool, so fun to read. All right, I have a question for you. It's right where we're talking about Ouroboros and the ring and the time loop that this guy is in. What if he did take some of that free will and step outside the loop? Would he disappear?
Back to the Future?
Yeah, Artie McFly's photograph, holding it up and going, oh no. What do you think?
Now you're going to give me a headache. It's always been such a weird, sort of trope with the disappearing image or someone disappearing, but they would have to disappear. If he didn't go back and complete all those steps like he has.
Okay, so he's alive in the moment. He's there in the moment.
Right. Yeah.
And if he doesn't do all of the next things, he's not going to have another moment. Is that what you're saying? If he steps outside of this time loop.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Disappear.
Does he immediately disappear? I would say no. I think, to me, I guess it seems logical, like he would live out the rest of his life and that would be the end of this sort of circle.
Would he remember anything of his past?
I think he would be the last version of himself to remember it, that one version.
Isn't that the way it is anyway?
That's true. No, you're right, though. Yeah, see, this is starting to hurt. No, he wouldn't be able to exist. Yeah, it's true. He wouldn't be able to exist. What am I saying? Of course not.
Another way to look at this story with the zombies is what he's really talking about are his ancestors. Those are the people who brought him to be what he is right now. This just tightens that circle in a icky kind of way. So the ancestors aren't spread out. When he's talking about all the zombies, I get this ancestor vibe.
You made a strong point that we're left with this, I don't know, it must be a term for this, I don't know what it is, but that chicken egg paradox. Maybe it's called the chicken egg paradox, I don't know. We're left with that, right? Because it suggests that he goes back in time at some point to fix something in that date. And so he has these different sort of missions, but that's the one that it seems like originally he went there for some other reason, fell in love or
really?
Was attracted to himself and then realizes what has happened or something, but it doesn't matter because in the end.
Oh, so it's a big mistake?
Right. Something like that.
That's interesting.
But in the end, the question is, it's outside of his control, right? It had to have happened because it must have happened because he's in this loop. Otherwise, he wouldn't have existed in the first place. So how did that happen the first time? That's the chicken or egg thing. Yeah. And we've just lost every listener.
No, no one is still here.
Yeah. All alone.
Yeah.
I miss you dreadfully.
Very good. Holy smokes. Hmm. I think we've solved that one for today.
No, no one's solving that. Yeah. So I don't know. What else is there to say about? I think your question about it being a sort of perversion, there's a moral dilemma there. Is it, I don't know how much you want to think about falling in love with yourself. I don't know if there's necessarily a love there or an attraction, a physical attraction.
Just look at the current day politics and you're going to find all sorts of people in love with themselves.
Oh.
If they could travel back in time, I'm sure they would do what they needed to do.
Yeah, that I was listening to, I think I mentioned before, I was listening to Team Human, Douglas Rushkoff's
podcast.
Yeah,
I like that one.
Yeah, he was interviewing Naomi Klein, who is a writer and a sort of slash activist writer. And her latest book is a memoir about how people began confusing her with Naomi Wolf, who's another writer and activist who used to do this work. And they said, anyway, it's been challenged, but she used to do, I thought, some really interesting stuff. I'm trying to think of the title of it, but some work with portrayals of beauty and advertising and the way women are portrayed. I can't remember the exact title of it, but anyway, so she wrote this book about doppelgangers, and it becomes a sort of vehicle to talk about this idea of doppelgangers in media and in life. And how really it asks us to reflect on ourselves, because we see ourselves in these doppelgangers. And so maybe with this text, is Heinlein ultimately asking us questions about ourselves, and at what points are we zombie, or are we the main character in our own lives? And how?
Yeah. Okay.
Are we?
I'll go along.
Yeah.
With that.
How narcissistic is it to think that it's just our own iteration that is the most important? And
now you've got
reverse
me.
Is that right?
Now you've got me on your side. Yeah, that's smart.
Yeah, so I think it raises questions like, how much control do we have over our lives? How narcissistic is it to think that we have control? Maybe is it perverse to try to maintain some sort of control? He goes to great lengths here just to make sure that he exists.
Yeah,
and it seems like, I think what you were suggesting was, once you know that, if you were to find out that you were your own grandfather, I feel like that should be, that you should just, that
should tell you something.
That should be the end, right? In some ways, like, how perverse to go back and impregnate yourself just so that you can exist. There's a real, hubris, arrogance there.
The whole thing is definitely a thought experiment that is worthwhile having.
Yeah. Yeah, a twisted ride. Yeah, fun ride, but a twisted one. Yeah, it's a bit of a carnival show or something. It's a bit twisted.
Yeah, that's a good description. That's a good description. All right.
We usually talk about devices. You know. That sci-fi is cool. It's a little different, I thought. So he takes him back. Protagonist Jane takes younger Jane into this back room.
The man from Uncle, the old spy, secret agent, secret agency. You go through these special doors behind some shelves or something that spread open, and boom, there you are in this ultra techie place that's going to take you into. Then I can believe that I would be able to.
Yeah, I like that. There's movement there. You feel like we've gone through this threshold doorway. You go into this back room. He could have pulled out, says there's like he's got a case, right? So it's like a suitcase or some kind of briefcase, and this metal case. And he could have pulled that out from behind the bar, but instead he takes him into this other room. Young Jane says, "Where is he?" He wants that revenge. And barkeep says, "Okay, right away. I opened a case. The only thing in the room," which is a weird room. The only thing in the room is the case. "It was a USF Coordinates Transformer Field Kit Series 1992 Mod 2. A beauty. No moving parts. Weight 23 kilos, fully charged and shaped to pass as a suitcase. I had adjusted it precisely earlier that day. All I had to do was to shake out the metal net This is interesting. This metal
neck,
which limits the transformation field, which I did. What's that? He demanded. Time machine, I said, and tossed the net over us. Hey, he yelled and stepped back. There is this technique to this. The net has to be thrown so that the subject will instinctively step back onto the metal mesh. Then you close the net with both of you inside completely. Else you might leave shoe soles behind or a piece of a foot or scoop up a slice of floor. But that's all the skill it takes. Some agents con a subject into the net. I tell the truth and use that instant of utter astonishment to flip the switch, which I did. That was cool.
I really like that part.
You know, he's been fishing this whole time, so it makes sense. He's a sort of fisherman. He's got his catch. Yeah.
Okay.
I thought that was, it's a bit silly. And maybe there's something comic, tragic about this whole story. There's some dark humor throughout.
I think almost every time travel story has similar moments. This one was very well done and fun to read.
In terms of the five devices, there's nothing else really for us to work with. We got that one. Sounds like you didn't really enjoy that.
I appreciate that it may be the first suitcase time machine of its kind. But since then, there have been many of those. Okay. So I'm looking back into the past through all of my experience with other devices very similar to this and thinking, that works for me. And it was well written and it was special for its time, but now pretty average time travel gear.
Okay. I thought the net was different regardless.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Again, there's some humorous to think about it. I mean, it makes as much sense as the time machine can make sense, but
you
got a little foot hanging out or somebody wouldn't like be like, their hand goes through the net and they lose a hand.
I can't remember the name of the movie. It's driving me crazy, but that ship that the U.S. Navy experimented with some other device, but then the urban myth is it was sent back in time and then it came back and people did get stuck in the hulls and their feet were through the deck and stuff like that. What's the name? They made a movie out of it. The ship, the whole thing that happened is called the Philadelphia Experiment.
Okay. No, but I just have heard that phrase. I don't really know.
Time travel movie must see.
Check that out, Philadelphia Experiment.
Okay.
I was just saying, should we talk about Jane's earlier kind of life as a, she works as a, what's the right way to phrase it? She ends up working as, when Japan invaded in World War II, this is what it reminded me of. So when Japan invaded South Korea and the Korean Peninsula and China, they created these sort of, they forced the women they conquered to be like these comfort women, right? For these military soldiers abroad. And early in this story, young Jane, female Jane, works as a sort of comfort woman by choice, right? For these astronauts, for these travelers. Remember that?
Vaguely.
So she ends up working for, because they have these.
I don't remember the spaceship.
It doesn't go into great detail, but it says it has these acronyms, right?
Short story.
Yeah. So she ends up working for, at first, it's the Women's Emergency National Corps Hospitality and Entertainment Section, which is abbreviated as WENCHES, right? Yeah, so she decided to join the WENCHES.
I think I know what happened to me here. I think I'm reading this story. I have questions about the misogyny of Heinlein due to the first story that we read. And when I saw that, I thought, I've got to move on. I've got to get past this to get into the story. That's exactly what.
Yeah, I was wondering because when I read that,
that's why I don't remember it.
Oh no, here we go again. And then she says what they now call, I don't know, my version says Space Angels Auxiliary Nursing Group, Extraterrestrial Legions. And then it's abbreviated later as like Angels, right, is the name of the group. I hesitate to bring that up because comparing it to Strangers, Strange Land, it felt more to me like the misogyny was coming from the characters and maybe the context there a little bit in a believable way and not from the author or himself. It just felt unnecessary in Stranger in a Strange Land. And here, I think maybe because of there's a certain sort of types he's playing with. One's the sort of, like you said before, maybe this gruff, rough around the edges, detective / military type. And obviously there's all types of people, right? We're not saying that all military people are blah, blah, blah. Of course we're not saying that.
See, now that fits in with your Blade Runner persona.
I imagine that later version of Jane, like in my head, could easily be played by Harrison Ford. I can see that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Who's young Jane played by?
Yeah.
Maybe it doesn't work because I don't think they don't talk about the degree to which she changes other than like body hair, I think is mentioned, that kind of thing. Maybe it's more of a, I'm having a hard time picturing young Jane as Harrison Ford, whereas I don't know, we go like,
they can do anything with technology.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know if if Harrison Ford is hitting on young female Harrison Ford. Is Jared, if I got to get myself in trouble here, is Jared,
yes,
Jared Leto or something is hitting on young Jared Leto. I don't know.
Okay. You know, oh my God.
Who's cool these days?
I don't know. Said it was a mistake.
Dune reference, like Timothy Charlemagne. Could be hitting on young Timothy Charlemagne or something. Anyway, if Heinlein is raising questions for us, I think as the best texts do, then is he intentionally or not raising questions about portrayals of gender? And here he's playing with extremes in some way, where we've got somebody who's,
of course,
working by choice in this field, that there's a clear sexual exchange happening as she's doing this work before she's later forced through this transition from female to male. So in other words, in this story, it emphasizes this change from one female type to another male type that's very different. It emphasizes that difference, right? Shortly after she talks about her work there, that we then get that she is shortly thereafter in the hospital and has this baby stolen and then has this forced sexual reassignment surgery. Right.
Good questions.
Yeah.
For sure. Good
questions.
And
on the other end, we get this sort of chauvinistic male type, this later version. And yet, with the sensitivity of an unmarried mother, that she's referred to as, we meet this ghostwriter. Yeah, the Jane that first shows up at the bar is writing these stories from the angle of an unmarried mother, even though she's male.
I
think I don't know, stuck my foot far enough into my mouth, or did I?
Would you like to start all over again?
I don't know. I'd like to think, kind of.
Are you in that?
Try and think through some things like that. It's a sensitive topic. I think Heinlein writing in that period, could someone publish, say, Asimov or some sci-fi magazine publish a work like this today? I saw it was originally rejected by Playboy way back when. I don't know for what reason, but they had rejected it.
So why would you think that they wouldn't publish this today?
Yeah, I'm just wondering out loud because I don't know. I don't feel like I'm informed enough to speak in any kind of depth, but it's certainly, I think, dealing with this issue of gender and a sort of forced sexual reassignment surgery. I don't know. Does this approach it in a way that's sensitive enough? Is that the right way to phrase it? I don't know.
I think in some areas, okay. In some, not. It's a crazy political time that we live in for these kinds of issues.
Yeah.
These issues, in my opinion, should be human issues, not political. So.
Yeah, no, I would hate to see it just completely politicized in some way. Yeah, I don't mean that. But yeah, I guess that's where the trouble comes in, perhaps, I guess, is...
Right. That's what I mean.
I guess I'd like to see some sort of analysis of this. It's a great university paper from somebody in gender studies looking at this short story.
Historically, it would be pretty interesting, I think, what people said at the time and what that thread brings us to today. Hmm. I think that'd be pretty interesting.
You're sitting at the bar at Pop's Place next to a jar of pickled eggs, sipping on a shot of old underwear. What will you be chatting about? You want me to go first? Can I help
yeah,
you?
Yeah, go first. I've got something.
Oh, you got something. Go for it. Yeah, what do you got?
No, you go first.
I don't have a whole lot to say other than just some, I guess, just to share what I've been enjoying. I have been thoroughly enjoying season 2 of Foundation.
Oh.
On Apple.
Lots of time travel in that story.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. I don't know. Season 1, I think I enjoyed it. And maybe it just took a full season for me to fully, I don't know if there'd be enough color and detail. It's such a huge story covering so much
time and
space, right? And I think I've gotten there at a place where I just want to spend more time in this world, whatever planet or
great world building.
Yeah.
Right?
And I think maybe it just took maybe a lot of season 1 to get that world built for me, but I'm thoroughly enjoying season 2. And I'm just mesmerized by Lee Pace, the guy who plays Empire.
Oh, yeah. I think he's been digitally enhanced in some way because he looks in some scenes.
He's like a Greek god.
Huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. How does that? It's got to be some kind of Photoshop super.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking the same thing.
Pouring all over him. Yeah. And I love like Giselda, the robot.
Right.
Person.
Yeah. I haven't read the whole series and I'm really feeling like maybe I should. I know we talked about the first one of it's a trilogy. Yeah. And I just haven't read the others. I should go back and reread that.
In the second season, do you remember in the first book, I'm pretty sure, where they sent out from Trantor, I think it is, sent out emissaries to the different planets to sell stuff and make trading and all of that. And that was in the second season. Hmm. So
you're watching it as well.
I think I'm all caught up. I think I might be one episode behind, but yeah, I think it's pretty fascinating.
Yeah. So just enjoying that.
But for me, I'd be sidling up to the bar and talking about theories of time and space because I've been watching all of these YouTubes about is time travel possible? What is time itself? What is reality? And there is a very slippery slide down these YouTube videos, I must say, when you start watching these things. And it makes me question even the substance of reality itself.
Wow.
Time's mixed in.
Yeah,
there.
We'll have to share a few of those in the show notes. I'd be curious to watch them as well. Yeah, I think it gets into a place where we talk about this. There's a lot we don't understand yet.
See? Exactly. That's what I'm talking about. Yep. And all of these shows end with, well, we're not quite sure about this or this. We need one more piece of the theory. And it's, oh, okay. Then what?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
What might we know in 100 years? Yeah. I went to for the first time, the Nordic Museum here in Seattle, in Ballard. And Ballard's a neighborhood in Seattle. It's in much of the Pacific Northwest, and Ballard in particular was originally settled by Nordic peoples in this museum. And it didn't say exactly where in Seattle, but there's this video. And I would have thought this was like a deep fake if I'd seen it on YouTube, but there's no way it is, I think, in this museum. It's a video of this Viking ship arriving in Seattle at the port in 1909. And all right, that's what you're saying, but I could find it on YouTube, put it in the show notes, but it's all pixelated as they come in. It looks like a really terrible pixelated copy of some like Charlie Chaplin film. And there's this huge crowd and there's these guys with top hats on the dock. And these Vikings come in with their, I don't know what you call those types of ships, a sort of dragon. Yeah,
the long ships.
Yeah, yeah. Figureheads on the side. And they've got their spears and their shields and they're hopping off the boat and they shake hands. The guy's in the top hat. And that's the end of the video. Or no, there's a couple of images of them, people posing next to them. And that's the end of the video. And one, it was just like, yeah, I guess there were videos back then, pretty rare, but there's some moving images, no sound, yeah. Obviously. But it was this strange experience of traveling back. And it came to mind as you were talking, because I just thought, wow, that's just over, 115 years ago or 114 years ago. And it seems so, so long ago, right? Many things have changed since.
It's got pieces of that anachronistic time travel, sprinkly magic dust. Love stories like that. And there are so many of them. Yeah, like this Philadelphia experiment ship. I think they were testing some kind of light laser and the experiment went bad and it bounced out of time and back into time. And when it did, that's when people got hurt because they didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, I'll have to look into that. What are we reading next?
Okay. That's a good question.
Tell me.
We've been going in chronological order, honestly. And we've done a pretty good job with the short stories that kind of put us in that. So I don't know. Do we want to continue with that? All right. You have mentioned the Michael Crichton one a couple of times. Do you want me to spoil a little bit of it?
No,
it's not a big,
I hate,
tell you nothing.
I hate spoilers. I do. Yeah.
That's so hypocritical.
No, I give you spoiler warnings. Yeah. Yeah.
I just did. And you said no.
Yeah.
Okay. I understand.
So this is Timeline, that book by Michael Crichton.
Timeline.
Okay.
Michael Crichton, such a good writer.
That just reminded me, I didn't do a whole lot of research, much looking online for our discussion today, but there was a good description in Quora, which I usually never look at, like Quora Answers or whatever, but that popped up and I happened to glance at it.
Okay.
And in the middle of that, there was somebody had posted an AI description of this, of a summary for All You Zombies.
All You Zombies?
Yeah. Oh, here it is.
Oh.
And it was like, so ChatGPT, somebody just posted the answer to this question in there. And so the question was, this is what we started with. Maybe it's a nice, I don't remember, snake eating the tail or an echo here. They said, what is meant by All You Zombies in Robert A. Heinlein, in the Robert A. Heinlein short story of the same name? ChatGPT said.
Okay, so this is ChatGPT AI. Here, we're not even talking to a human here. I'm interested in the response.
It says, just four sentences here. I think four or five. All You Zombies is a short story by Robert A. Heinlein that explores themes of time travel, identity, and gender. The title refers to the main characters who are all revealed to be, quote, zombies, or people who have been replaced with clones of themselves. In the story, the main character, a temporal agent, is sent back in time to prevent a catastrophic event, but instead becomes the father of his own mother. A paradox that leads to the revelation that the main character is also a zombie. The story explores the idea that our identities are not fixed, but rather are shaped by our experience and the choices we make.
That sounds like, not quite there, but it's going to be there pretty soon. It's going to be scary.
Not exactly clones, right? But
I guess editors are inundated with the, what are the short pieces that can make a lot of money for people? And I think we've talked about this before. There have been, I don't know enough, this is still a trend, but when I read about it, it was a problem for reviewers because there were, instead of maybe five stories to review, they had 50 stories to review because it was so easy for people to just fit this into ChatGPT or some kind of AI device. And they said it was really a waste of time because they could pick them out most of the time. And I would pick that one out as one. But like we've both said, it's coming pretty fast.
Yeah. I think that's pretty close.
That you won't be able to pick
that. Skim read a skim read, you'd be like, okay, yeah, that's a summary.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's the deep fake videos that are spooking me. Because really, what do you believe now?
Yeah, that's it. As soon as I see it.
I believe less.
Yeah, video, I'm like, is that real? Oh. All right, Michael Crichton timeline.
Oh, you're going to enjoy it. Yeah, I'm going to read it again, too.
Yeah, excited. Third time. Wow. All right, yeah. You must like it. All right, we could do a different one.
Yeah. The thing is, I want to tell you a little bit about the story, but you're not letting me. I think that's okay. That's fair and everything. Okay, I won't even say that.
All right, I'm going to try not to look at this online. Yeah, a review of Timeline by Michael Crichton on Thaco. Okay. No. All right, I'm not going to look.
Okay.
Pleasure.
I'll see you at the Spaceman's Ball.
Spaceman's Ball.
Life, Death, Sci-Fi.